Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
What's that, hoary horse? It's £10 for a handjob. Let's talk about it later. I'm just being filmed at the moment. Hello, welcome to another episode of Rahala Stapa, this week with the excellent Bilal Zafar, who is a brilliant stand-up comedian and has taken the Twitch world by storm. I have not quite taken the Twitch world by storm, but it's doing okay. Check me out at twitch.tv/rkherring. You can see Snooker on Mondays or Tuesdays. Rahalastapa generally on Wednesdays at 8, and the new hit show, Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun, it gets less viewers and listeners every week, is at Thursday night at 8 p.m. Hoary Horse, who you just saw, is on that. Do subscribe if you feel like it. Also, we have another Kickstarter on the go, this one for self-playing snooker. We've got a wonderful Panini-style album with all 32 me's, two referees, two commentators, and another big picture of me one and me two together. So 40 stickers, stats, all sorts of stuff. There's T-shirts, there's badges, there's membership cards. And all the profit from this, once we've paid for producing all this stuff, will be put back into helping live comedy and helping some comedy clubs keep going through this pandemic. So it's all for a good cause. We're not taking any of the money ourselves. You can also get like things like video, personalized video message from one of the me's. You can actually sponsor an episode of Me One versus Me Two Snooker, which I think is very exciting. But check that out, Kickstarter. It's rahalastapa.co.uk/Kickstarter is the easiest way to get. Thanks so much for all your support. Thanks for helping us get the stone clearing one over the line. Now let's sit back, relax, and enjoy another Rahala Stapa with Bilal Zafar. Hello! Am I in the right place? Welcome! Please welcome a man who has nearly finished his book. It's Richard Herring. Hello! Welcome. Lovely to be back remotely again with another Richard Herring's Little Snooker Table podcast. It's the same as the usual podcast, but there's a little snooker table in the background. Look, there it is. Can't believe it's taken me that long to realise that that fitted the acronym. But I was hanging out with a mobile blacksmith the other day. I genuinely saw a guy who was running a smithy, like a blacksmith thing, from the back of a van. He had a portable furnace and he was making horseshoes in this farm. I've never seen anything as amazing. It's genuinely the coolest thing I've ever seen. He calls it Rahelastapa anyway, that guy. But I kind of think, you know, is there any profession that would be more, if you could travel back in time to the original blacksmiths and go, look, one day this bloke will not only be able to travel around to make horseshoes, but he'll have a little tiny portable furnace in his vehicle as well. It would have blown their blacksmith minds if they'd thought that. And yet blacksmiths, you still need a blacksmith to make horseshoes. That's the kind of crazy world we live in. That's what happens even in the countryside. Those are the crazy things that you think about. I've been what I've been thinking about this week. I know there's a lot of stuff about Russia trying to hack stuff and ruin elections and stuff, and trying to get the secret recipe for the vaccine by hacking into the Oxford computers. What I think is they should make a fake recipe for a vaccine. It should be like when people have a shared fridge and someone's nicked all their milk, and then they put like spunk or something in the milk or laxatives or something like that. We could put in a fake vaccine recipe that looks like it works, but it's a slow acting poison, and then everyone in Russia will take it and they'll all die, and then we can just walk in and nick their stuff and we'll have won, and it'll be their fault for stealing. That's the thing. I mean, it's sort of a bit genocide-y, but it's the only way those cheeky Russians will learn. That's what I say, so that's my idea. And what else has been going on? Oh, my son is obsessed with the song Bananas in Pyjamas. I don't know if you've heard it, but once you hear it, it's the version we've got is literally 25 seconds long. It's just the bananas in pyjamas, and it's just that, and then it stops. And so we just have to put it on repeat. And once you've heard Bananas in Pyjamas 40 times in a row, it starts to get under your skin. If you don't know the song, it goes, Bananas in Pyjamas are coming down the stairs. Bananas in Pyjamas are coming down in pairs. Bananas in Pyjamas are chasing teddy bears. Cos on Tuesdays, they all tried to catch them unawares, which it seems like a jolly thing on the first read. But when you hear it a lot of times, you start to read between the lines a bit on this. The bananas have been upstairs in bed or preparing for bed and are still in their pyjamas. But now they're coming down the stairs. That's a bit weird. Why are they coming down? Is it the morning time? Not one at a time, but banana shoulder to banana shoulder. So if you try and run past them and get back up the stairs to possible safety, there's no chance. It's a wall of bananas. The two sinister bananas, maybe more than that, they're just in pairs. So there's maybe four, six, eight. They are chasing teddy bears. Not for fun, mind you. You might think it's just a fun game where fruit has been given clothes, motion and consciousness, and it plays tags with soft toys that have also charmingly come alive. No, the evil bananas are attempting to catch the teddy bears without them realizing. Wants to catch them unawares. There's no consent in this game. Consent is the last thing the bananas want. They want to catch the teddy bears off guard. And yet, perversely, presumably to shit the teddy bears up, if the sight of two animated cock-shaped foodstuff dressed ready for bed, that I think we can assume they'll be dragging the bears into is not scary enough. The bananas have set this purge of the teddy bears in the calendar to a specific day. They're not going to catch this Tuesday. It's Tuesday every time. They're hoping to catch them unaware on Tuesday. They're not going to catch them too unaware on maybe the third or fourth Tuesday, are they? Even if your head is full of fluff, you're eventually going to put two and two together and work out what's happening. Oh, it's Tuesday. It's bedtime. The bananas are put on their pyjamas. Looks like we're about to get chased, captured, and have both ends of a pair of bananas inserted into whatever orifice they can find. Let's not get onto the zucchini in bikinis that are in the other version of the song he listens to. They're behind the bananas and joining in the bear hunt. They're at the best. The Ghislaine Maxwells, that's what I call a Ghislaine Maxwell, of all of this. Finding the bears, encouraging the bananas to go for them, putting on scanty swimwear to encourage and engorge the bananas further. I know a lot of people are trying to cancel inappropriate children's literature at the moment, but how we're not starting with this. This is worse than the worst thing that David Walliams has done. And believe me, he has done a lot of bad stuff. So hope you're enjoying these Twitch streams. That we're doing them live on Wednesday nights. Not for the next 2 weeks, because I'm about to go on TV. If you think I'm coming back and doing this shit after I've been on TV, you're sadly mistaken. This is the last one. Fuck you all. I never liked you. I was using you to get onto TV, and now I'm on TV, so fuck you. It won't be on for a bit, so I'll probably carry on doing this until it's on. And then fuck you. And then I'm going on holiday for a week. So we'll be back in a fortnight. We've got some fantastic guests coming up. Go to richherring.com/Rahelastapa/tour, and you can find out who's coming up. I've nearly finished my book, as I said. I've just got like about 10 more pages to copy edit, and then we're done. So it's all very exciting times for me at the moment. I'm very much looking forward to the next week. I won't be able to do anything on Twitch, but you remember, you can subscribe. If you're with Amazon Prime, you can give me some money for free, or become a badger, or you can pre-order that book that I'm talking about. It's called The Problem with Men, When's International Men's Day and Why It Matters. Go to Amazon or Waterstones or wherever you like. Just put in a pre-order. You don't even have to buy it. You can un-pre-order it later. If it gets pre-ordered a lot, then they think it's good, and then they put it in the shops and everything, and then it might sell some copies, which would be, you know, it would be nice for a change. It'd be nice to get royalties for once rather than just be paid some money and never earn it back from the publishers. They'll catch on to that one of these fine days. Anyway, enough of my yakking. Let's get on with this. My final guest ever on Rahalastapa. He's probably best known for appearing in the background of Hollyoaks on at least 3 episodes of Hollyoaks. That's where you've seen him before. Will you please welcome the amazing Bilal Zafar, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is. There he is, Bilal. Did I say that all right for you, Bilal?
Yeah,
is that okay?
That's fine.
Is that how you say it?
Well, okay, so you tweeted that you were very anxious about this.
Well, I had a dream, and I'm quite cross with you, because I think, you know, it's nice of me to have you on my podcast in the first place, mate. And I introduced you, and I said your name like that, and you were all like, oh, no, actually. And you were saying it, you know, and they said, no, it's pronounced like this. I was like, mate, come on, it's the start of the
podcast. Oh, I did it live.
Like this. And then I would pronounce it like you pronounce it. You said, no. Be like, no, and you've been really arsy about it. And I, under my breath, I was going, come on, mate. We were also in a big warehouse full of sort of punks. It was like a post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
But I don't like your attitude there in the dream.
And was so I dressed like a punk or just myself?
No, you were dressed. You weren't dressed like a punk. You were dressed like yourself. Mm. I just thought it was rude, you know. And especially now I've listened to loads of interviews with you. Loads of people have pronounced your name wrong.
Well, it's rude
never
that
picked
you
them
said
up,
it.
So I don't know why you picked up on in my dream on it. And I'm quite offended.
You were rude in the dream, in the warehouse. Now, it's not something I have a big problem with, my name.
Well,
I kind of...
Yeah.
So I'll tell you. So the actual pronunciation is Bilal Zafar, right? But if you don't have an English name, you get used to people saying it wrong.
This is what you were like in the dream. That was all you put in.
It's fine. No, yeah, okay. I don't. It's the thing I get. I really don't care how people say it. So it's funny that you thought. So when I got, I remember primary school, the teacher being like, it's Bilal. And I just had to accept it. And the thing is, though, Zafar sounds good. That makes it sound classy, so I don't mind.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with it.
But do you think that calling yourself Zaffa Cakes on all your Twitter feed, that implies it's pronounced Zaffa?
Yeah, but again, it's really not a big deal.
Okay. Well, I wish you'd tell your dream version of yourself like that, because I nearly cancelled the interview.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought you were so... You know, I was being nice. I had you on the podcast. It's, you know...
Right, well,
but there we go. I'm glad we've cleared the air, because, you know, it was something that was bothering me. And if you behave like that in dreams, how are you going to behave in reality?
That's true. I'm glad we cleared the air.
Yeah. So, tell me about being in. That's been in my dream to be in Hollyoaks.
Really?
I wanted to be like. I'm too old now. It would be disgusting now, but I wanted to be like a 40-year-old man who came into town and basically all the women in it fancied him. He got off with them all. I thought that would be a good character. Basically, Dan Tetzler, I've done some work, then got that more or less.
That happened.
Yeah, he got that job.
So I was an extra. So when I was at uni, I went to uni in the Northwest, and they film Hollyoaks somewhere there. So you'd get like 70 quid a day for being an extra. But the thing is, you're not, no one's too old. I was in it a lot because I was like actually young, and we were all college students. There were people that were way older in the class. The camera's just not on them. It's really weird. There was a guy that's bald at this college.
Well, sometimes you get older people at colleges as well.
You do, but yeah. Was Hollyoaks one of the... Do you at a college? Yeah. Mature students?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember the college in Hollyoaks. I mean, maybe it's after my time that you were in Hollyoaks. So I don't remember you in it. I watched it quite a lot through the 90s and early 2000s, and then, you know, I realized I was a 40-year-old man, and maybe it was time to stop watching Hollyoaks.
It's not very good, though, is it?
It's not very good. It's not very good.
Did
you get to see any of the stars of Hollyoaks behaving in a starry and up themselves manner?
There was a little bit where we queued to get food and one of the actors just went in front of me. There was a guy who came down some stairs and stood there like he was really important. That's kind of it. Some of them were quite nice.
Right.
You know.
Because it's difficult, isn't it? It's supporting artists, I think we are supposed to call you.
That's the politically correct term for it.
But it's a difficult job. And, it's covered in Ricky Gervais's extras, which... I have some problems with the. I watched a bit of it today on Facebook. It's funny. I think the first series of it is very good. I think the second series is all right, but I think the first series is great. It's that world of you're not really actors, are you? When you're an extra.
His whole sitcom is quite misleading because you can't just be in the background of a show and then get a sitcom.
No,
extras are weird. By the way, can I just say?
Yeah, I know.
They're strange people a lot of the time. I've had weird experience. That's why I stopped doing extra work. It was easy money. This is when I was like 18 or 19.
Sure. Why did they not just get loads of people from the college? Like you'd think lots of people would want to do that job and they could get age appropriate people in.
It's not fun. It's not fun work. Right. You just sit there all day. Have you done it?
I haven't done it, but I've done acting in things. I've done acting in things where you haven't got that much to do. And
different.
It's an incredibly, but it's still incredibly dull.
Yeah, I find it very
boring. Lot of waiting around for stuff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously I've been on your acting school of excellence and you have done, we'll get onto all your comedy and all your Twitch stuff, of course, but you have done quite a few, you actually do acting for reals.
I've done three things.
Yeah.
It's good.
Which isn't
bad.
It's hard to get in stuff.
It's very,
you've been in a film. You've been in a proper film, Hollywood blockbuster film.
Very easy money acting.
Yeah. If you can get the job, but I heard you being interviewed saying you'd auditioned for Sherlock, which I also auditioned for, and I auditioned for a worse part than you did.
What were you going
for? My part had one line, I think. It was called something like Indignant Man, my character. And then when I watched, I didn't get it. I went all the way into Richmond to do the audition and it was I was running because I got the wrong train. And it was a two-line audition. And when I watched it, genuinely, the guy was, the screen was all blurry because Sherlock had just been knocked over or something. So it was just like an effect of this guy. So you couldn't even see his face. And just like...
Well, that's good you didn't get it.
Wait, he couldn't really hear.
You would have been sad, though, if you got that. And then
I was modest enough to know that I hadn't done much acting. And I kind of thought, look, if I'm going to do some acting, I've got to get in basically the ground floor level. I've done a few little bits, but it's very, very rare that I've got something that I didn't write. So I did. I was Percy the Shepherd in Servants, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah.
It must be difficult for you to be sat there talking to me when you know.
When
you remember that, I was Percy the Shepherd. It was Servants. I think it was up against Big Brother. It was up against some really big Channel 4 or ITV show. And I think it might have been Big Brother in the early days that just took all the viewers. So nobody watched it.
Zero people watched it.
Yeah.
I played a sort of
comedy shepherd. So that was the one. I think that's the one job I auditioned for. I did the audition and thought, I'm going to get this. And I did get it.
Well done.
I did it. And I was good.
Good money?
It probably was okay.
Want to know how much?
I can't remember. It was 2000. It was early on. It was early after the Double Act, but 2001 or 2002, something like that. So it would have been good money, and I didn't have any. I wasn't getting paid very much at that time, so I would have appreciated the money. But if you get the part, then especially if you've got hardly anything to do. Yeah, that's very good money. But so the movies, the Last Christmas,
that was
a big payday. I haven't seen it. I've heard reports of it.
What have you heard? What reports?
That you were really good in it.
Good. Yes. It was good. It's like the I didn't have a particularly good year last year. Things didn't really go my way and stuff. But then that popped up. I just had to go into an audition room and react to my fish dying. That was it. And then I was in a film where I play Amelia Clark's friend. It's mad.
That's not too bad.
Nah, it was good. It's weird, isn't it? Because it's luck, so you don't get cocky about it.
What I find fascinating about acting is there is a lot of luck in it, because I've been on both sides, more auditioning than being the person who's auditioning actors,
yeah,
rather than auditioning myself. Mm-hmm. And often you get down to a choice of two people and you go, don't know, could be either of them. They're both good. And so it's all, you know, there might be three people in the room, two people say one of them and one says the other. And so that you go with the two people. Mm. Sometimes it's two people and two people, and then you go, oh, well, I'll go for this one.
Like X Factor. And like,
if it's them you're auditioning to be in a new sitcom called The Office, then suddenly you become like an international film star, pretty much. Most of those guys have gone on to be at least certainly 10 years of great work, maybe 20 years of great work off the back of that. If it goes to the other guy, then you might never get that. You might get a break later, but your chances are you won't get a break like that again. And then you become bankable and marketable, and then you get all the parts you want. So that's where I think it's luck, because you see the status. You do auditions. When you take auditions, you see a lot of people, and some of them are surprisingly bad, right? Some of them are just going, how the fuck are you even here?
Well, you haven't even read the script. Well, I must have seemed like that. When I first auditioned, I just read off the page. I didn't.
Yeah.
And it took the casting lady that gets me my things to be like, you can't do it like that. You have to learn it and know it. So I was probably one of those.
I mean, I'm sure I have been to an extent as well, but it's like even if you're reading it, but you haven't, it's like they haven't even read it through, you know, they're mispronouncing words. You think, like, you've got the script in advance, at least find out how to say the word eunuch rather than saying ooch.
Whatever. What was it?
It was the word eunuch. It was a joke about the female eunuch, and one of the actors came in and said the female ooch, which I've now put, I've just put that in my sitcom, someone calling it the female ooch. It made me laugh. The female ooch. And then as you can't really go, oh no, that is so wrong to go, oh no, that's eunuch. Because it feels, so you just have to let it go and go, well, you haven't got the part.
Yeah, you
didn't bother to find out how to pronounce that.
Yeah, that's tough. But then have you ever done a lot of prep for an audition? Because that's hard.
I don't take them very. So I auditioned for one of the late, I think the last Bridget Jones film where I was going to play. And in the end, I saw this film and the character didn't even make it in. I recognised my lines because I did learn the lines for this one, or I tried to. A different character ended up doing the lines, but I was playing it was to play some professor interviewing one of the characters.
Brilliant.
And I did put in quite a lot of work for that, but then went around to someone's house and there was just like an assistant with a camera not giving any direction. And then you just had to sort of do it. And I found it absolutely impossible. So I was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, that's hard. I went for an American sitcom to be the lead. But I had to learn 11 pages,
right?
Which was just a nightmare because, you know, with stand up, I do everything off bullet points. I don't type stuff out.
Yeah.
So that was hard. And then you do it. You obviously don't get it. But then even if I got it, I would have got to the next round. So that's just, but I guess that's what it takes to be a star in America.
Yeah. And sometimes people don't audition well and are good if you do cast them, and some people audition brilliantly and then aren't that good, you know. So it's a very flawed system. They usually do it by, you know, I've done quite a few video ones now, but that's really difficult as well.
Oh, yeah.
But I quite enjoy watching the ones when they've got like, the last one I did, the girl who got the part, her husband, who was American, was reading in the other lines, but didn't know any of the references and stuff. Oh. He was getting it all wrong. But she was actually, it was one of the most brilliant reads. We couldn't find anyone to do this character, and she was just brilliant at it. But even with this very wooden man, not knowing, I can't remember who it was, that he didn't pronounce their name correctly. It was very funny. But so it's a mug's game. Don't become an actor.
Don't do it.
None of them can work. None of them can work now. That's it. They're all screwed.
Oh, yeah. They're all in those Zoom adverts. Awful. Awful. Waiting for a takeaway to come in really bad quality. I hate it.
Yeah.
Zoom TV shows.
I would like, thank you very much for the high quality of your, I'm sure the people watching would, and listening as well, would like to thank you for the high quality of your equipment, which is as we were saying beforehand, Richard Osman, the TV producer and multimillionaire, just did everything off his iPad saying, well, iPad's as good as a laptop. But it definitely wasn't. And it wasn't as good as this.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That happened. You say he doesn't have a laptop. He does. On the show, he does.
It doesn't. It's nothing in the laptop. It doesn't work. It's just a prop. So it's not even a laptop. So his laptop is not a laptop. It's just a prop to make it look like he's looking up the answers rather than someone telling him in his ear.
And he's getting him in the ear and looking. Yeah. Isn't TV horrible?
It is horrible. But he's a lovely, lovely man.
So he seems nice.
He's very nice. You should go on. Do you like doing quizzes? Are you any good at quizzes?
I like watching them a lot. I love watching Pointless. I watch The Chase, but I don't like it. What's the one where that guy presents it where? Oh, I can't. I won't remember the name. I like the ITV ones that have fake laugh tracks. They're always good when someone makes a really bad joke and it's a loud laugh out of nowhere. I enjoy that very much.
Yeah. You'd be good. I'll get you on house. The only thing I can do for you young comedians, I can suggest that you get asked to go on House of Games.
Yeah.
I think you'd be good on House of Games.
Please.
It's good for comedians because it's sort of the logic of it is very comedic. I think there's a lot of sort of puns and stuff and putting things together.
Any TV where I don't have to go on and like debate a racist guy on Saturday morning. Oh, you know.
Well, we'll get onto that later in this podcast. though I read that Twitch are cutting down on people being racist and homophobic, which is really going to cut down my output on this channel, I have to say.
Yeah, that's sad.
What am I going to be able to say if I can't?
Is that why
you can't say anything these days? That's the thing. You can't say...
You can't say anything anymore.
You can't say anything.
You can't.
It's disgraceful. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
That's spot on. What you just said there.
Thank you. It's an original thought I've had. And it's time someone thought. You can't even say that you can't say anything, really. No. That's the thing.
If I said that
you can't say anything, cancelled. So you can't even say.
Watch what happens to you on Twitter now for that.
I'm going to watch out for that. So you grew up in Wanstead, which is not a borough that I know very much about.
Well, Redbridge is the borough.
Okay. Wanstead is a little town. Well, it seems to have quite a big history. I looked it up on Wikipedia, but most of the things have been knocked down. Most of the historic things have been destroyed.
Well, it's weird because the thing is, if you sound from Wanstead is kind of like now it's really fancy and like all hipstery. I am from there technically, but I grew up on like a council estate bit,
right,
which is sort of near the fancy high street. So when people hear that, I must sound middle class, but yeah, I don't know. It's a nice place. Very expensive now. To live.
Can you convince me to go on holiday to Wanstead? What would you say if I say, I'm thinking of going on holiday. I'm thinking of going to Wanstead.
Okay.
Convince me why I should go to Wanstead.
Okay. You've got M&S.
Okay, that's good.
Duck Pond. Very, very love. Beautiful Duck Pond.
Yeah.
A war memorial, if you're a patriot.
Mm-hmm. They have those everywhere.
Oh, but this one is, I mean...
What about the sign from the pub about the cherry pie? Have you seen that sign? There's a pub with from the 1700s. A cherry pie is commemorating a cherry pie from the 1700s. If I lived anywhere near Wanstead, I'd be looking at that.
We're very different people. I've never noticed
Wanstead House. Do you ever been to Wanstead House?
Wanstead House. What is it?
Well, you won't have been there because it was demolished. It was demolished to satisfy the, I think that this is from memory, the Duke of Wellington's gambling debts. Well, I don't understand how demolishing a house pays your gambling debts. That just sort of, unless someone goes, I hate you.
I wasn't
I'll let
involved.
You off this £1,000 if I could smash your house to pieces.
I wasn't involved in any of
that. I'm not saying you were.
How do you know from memory about this?
Because I read about it on Wikipedia today, so this is I'm not looking at it right now. What about the Churchill statue in Wanstead? Because Churchill was the MP for. Do you think that should be taken down?
Yeah,
should be yanked down
for a laugh, you know. Take it down. I'll take it down. I'll go do it now after this. It's not far. I remember when someone put lipstick on it once. That was funny.
Okay, that's good.
I guess I could do something quite offensive for some PR.
Yeah.
Take it down. It's going to be difficult. Are you going to help? How do you take a statue down yourself?
It's pretty hard, I think, to take a statue down if it's been bolted on correctly. I think that's the point of them, really. Though occasionally, like, someone will steal their, like, if they're those Henry Moore kind of abstract, beautiful, abstract things are made of solid bronze. I mean, a lot of these statues are made of bronze, which if you melt it down, you can get quite a lot of money for. So if you can manage to yank one up, you can. I think Colston would have got a bit of money for Colston.
Melt it.
You could melt a bit of it, but I think they're sort of. You'd need some kind of digger. I think with Colston, because it was hollow, they managed to use the pressure of lots of bodies to just pull it down. But I think it took some time.
Okay, I'll get some of the...
I think it would be difficult to do on your own.
I'll get some of the youths of the area together.
Yeah.
Give them some sigs. And we'll pull down the Churchill statue. And I'll live stream it on Twitch.
Okay. That's a good idea, though.
For a laugh.
And who is your favourite... You're not on the famous people from Wanstead. I have to let you know that.
Okay. I'm on the Wikipedia. Notable people from my school.
You're on the notable people from your university. And I didn't look at your school.
Am I on the university?
Yeah.
Someone put me there. The school is good because Ronnie O'Sullivan went there.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Well, my favourite Wanstead famous people are Robert Dudley, who was the Queen Elizabeth I's lover, I think, really. He died in Wanstead.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. It was the Earl of Leicester or something. I can't remember what he was. Jesse Wallace from EastEnders.
Oh, yeah. I used to see her all the time.
Yeah, I used to
walk past her on the high street.
Sheridan, the playwright. Did you ever see him walking around? He wrote for School for Scandal. Yeah, you've seen him walking around.
Seen him around.
Yeah. Your university.
Was that it?
Your University of Bolton, you went to. I didn't know there was a University of Bolton.
Nobody does.
So that's well done. Going there. Must have been. Sam Allardyce went there.
Did he?
Stuart McConey. The boxer. Is it?
No. This is all wrong.
Stuart McConey went there.
Firstly,
of the Buzzcocks, Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks went there.
I feel like I need... No. Firstly, from Wanstead. Wanstead, right? The thing about that is that's a very small area, but it's close to so many... Like, Jonathan Ross is from round the corner. So is David Beckham. So there's a lot of people that are sort of from the...
This is Bolton, I'm
talking about. Alfred Hitchcock is from my bit of East London, but just not Wanstead. So I just want to say...
If he's not on Wikipedia, it's not good. There's a lot of people from the University of Bolton.
You've done well.
The boxer guy, I can't remember his name, the one of the boxers.
Amir Khan. The university is really new. So I don't think Sam Allardyce went there. I don't think he's got a degree.
It says Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks, Howard DeVito, he was a member of the Buzzcocks for a while.
That is a lie.
It's on the Wikipedia page. Why would they lie?
This is PR from the university.
Would they lie?
Yeah, very disappointing, uni.
Good. Well, that's all of that. That's all that sorted out.
That's that bit done.
That's all that. That's done. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. So I haven't seen any of your shows, but I like the sound of them all, and I especially like the sound of the show that you were nominated as best newcomer. I introduced you right in the new act of the year Leicester Square Theatre.
I'm not going to get it. You gave me the runner-up certificate for the Leicester Square Theatre New Comedian of the Year 2015. Got £500.
I was quite drunk and ate a lot of pizza. There was free pizzas backstage. And there was a lot of people with difficult to pronounce names on that night. That's what I remember about that. I probably was backstage going, how do I say that?
It's not like it used to be comedy.
You've got to get the names right, otherwise it's rude, isn't it? Especially if you're the compere.
So you
came second in that. You won the Hackney Empire new act that Stuart Lee
did
was.
Did you do that?
I did. I did the same year Stuart Lee won, and I did not get. I didn't get to the final.
You didn't get to the final.
No, I didn't get to the final. I was in. I think I might have got through one round. There was quite a lot of rounds to get through. I wasn't very good at that stage. It was 1990. I think he won. We'd only just moved to London, and I hadn't really got a stand up act. And I think I did okay in the first heat, and then
I won that in 2016. It's the year after being runner up.
So 26 years after Stuart Lee won it, that's a terrifying statistic.
I was born in 91.
I've seen it.
What was that like when he won it? Was that annoying for you?
No, I remember people saying that I looked happier than he did. Because I think I was like amazed that I knew he was good. But we were super new, and I know it's the new act award, but I didn't think he, and we were working together, so I thought, oh great, this is only going to help if he's if he's done well in a competition, it will help us both. So I wasn't, and I didn't really want to do stand-up, and I didn't see myself as a stand-up, so I wasn't that bothered about me not getting very far. And
that's correctly.
But ultimately he was just interested in doing stand-up, really. That's why I don't think the double act was ever really going to work in a long-term sense, because he just wanted to do his own thing, really. So, I should have been crying.
You should have been crushed.
I should have gone, no, this is the time to veer off, get away from him.
Yeah. In 1990.
Could have changed history. But actually getting nominated for Best Newcomer at the Fringe is probably even, that's a bigger deal, do you think?
The one that you put on the main bit of your bio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because I didn't know it was a thing really before it happened. So because I wasn't, I just did a show. I didn't sort of plan. You know how a lot of comedians do a thing where they do 40 minutes every year and then do the hours to try and get nominated. I didn't know about that stuff. I just liked my cake shop show and just did it. And it just happened, which was, I guess that's a nice way for things to happen. But it's been pretty crap since then.
So tell us about, I know you've talked about this a lot, but tell us briefly about what the premise of that show was, because it is a nice idea.
So my Twitter handle is Zaffercakes or Zaffercakes, Zaffercakes, you know. And what happened was, this was 2015, maybe early 2015. So a hashtag started trending. It was hashtag boycott Muslim businesses. That was getting popular on Twitter. My brother, who has a Twitter account, tweeted, boycott Zaffercakes. He's a cake shop in Bristol and he refuses to serve non-Muslims. That's it. And a lot of people got very angry, and then I just went with it. And I hadn't been to Bristol at that point. And it just became a huge thing. It was really weird. People could have easily researched it and seen it was a joke. Could have scrolled down my feed and saw that I did stand up, but they were just so angry. And that became the... I made an hour out of that and that became my debut show. I mean, now racism is way more mainstream now.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it helped push.
I think it helped, hopefully. It wasn't as good then. Racism hadn't taken off in the way it has now.
It's like I did Hitler Mustache, which was about how, the country could never become fascist and the feeling like we were moving on to the next stage where we were going to defeat racism. But, again, if anything.
Yeah, I think we both helped.
Yeah.
Helped move it along.
Yeah.
And now it's brilliant.
It's great.
It's great. Yeah.
It's very successful. I think the thing with racism, I don't know if the racists have looked into it, but it usually just doesn't work out that well for the racists. It's fun for a little bit if you enjoy, persecuting people based on where they're from, which I can understand the fun of that.
It's a lot of fun.
It is fun, but ultimately it comes back and it rebounds on you, and it's quite bad. So I don't know if they've looked that far ahead in the history books as to what happens to racists generally. But maybe they'll get a lucky break this time.
Yeah, it could be there.
I felt we gave fascism a good go before our time in the 1930s and 1940s. I think we really did. Let's give fascism a crack, and it didn't work out. And I would have thought, let's not do that again, but. Some people just say, maybe it was just the personalities behind it that didn't. Maybe it was, if anything, Hitler is sort of better than the ones we've got now. And the ones we've got now don't have the charisma of Hitler.
That's true. Yes. That's what they always say.
I'm not saying Hitler was good. I'm just saying he was good.
Public speaking.
Yeah.
That's what they always say. He's really good at that.
I don't think we've got a new Hitler. That's the thing.
Do you think that's what we need?
Yeah, I think if we want it to work, I think we've got to get sort of Hitler times two.
Yeah, like man, you need a new Alex Ferguson.
But I kind of hope, I kind of hope it doesn't happen, fingers crossed. Because I'm quite a liberal guy at the end of the day. And so you've done a few other shows. So, I like that. I like the using. I must have seen some bits of that. That was what you were doing at the...
That's what I did in the final. Yeah. That's what I was doing. That was my final, my competition set was 5 minutes.
That's the kind of thing, that's the kind of thing I like. That's a little bit like my International Men's Day thing in a way. It's sort of using the internet to not saying you copied me, and are obsessed with me. Notice you've got a I Paid a Pound badge on, though. That's the original I Paid a Pound badge.
Oh, so this is like rare, is it?
That's, well, I think like you could probably put that on eBay and get £2 for it, which is more than you paid for it, two or three.
Good investment.
I think people ask for them all the time, and we don't. I've got two left. I don't.
So you obviously don't remember.
I don't remember
how I got this, but you wouldn't. A very long time ago. So I was. This is when I'd left uni. This was in Manchester. So I'd moved to Manchester. I was a care worker, and you were doing a show at the Lowry, I believe. It might have been 2000, maybe 2014 or 15. I'm not sure. Nice. Don't know. But I tweeted, right? I didn't at him, everybody. I tweeted, Richard Herring's doing a show in like near me, but it's £20. I can't afford it. And you searched your name and replied, yeah, and said, you can come for free if you can't afford it. And I did.
I'm a nice guy, aren't I? That's paid off. I'm glad that's paid off and become public, showing what a great guy I am.
So you gave me two tickets. That's £40. And I won £39.
Oh, you bought the bat. You bought the bat. Okay, that's fine.
That was very nice, but I felt bad about it because I didn't mean to criticize your price. I didn't know you'd see the
tweet.
Well,
I'm cheap. I'm cheap compared to most comedians, but I also, we shouldn't publicize this too much. But, you know, I get certain, you get, as you know, as a comedian, you get a certain number of comps anyway, and I very rarely use them anyway. And I would rather people were in. And if the theater's not full, I'd rather, you know, get the seats as full as possible, especially with people who want to come. So if I, I search my name on Twitter anyway, because I think it's interesting. It's interesting to see what people are saying about you. Yeah. It's not, people say it's a vanity search. It's absolutely not a vanity search, because not most of it isn't very nice.
Right.
Yeah, it's not like if people are saying something nice about you, they'll generally at you in. But if they, you know, I just think it's interesting to get a flavor of what is going on. But there's not that much, I have to say. I don't think it's arrogant. I don't think it's vain. I think it's quite, like, I've heard you say you don't read reviews and things like that. I mean, I always haven't read my reviews and everything. I'm kind of interested.
You never read them either.
No, I always read them. I'm interested to see what people think.
But people are dumb.
I know, I don't care. But so, but as long as you know that and you go, okay. But if 20 people say the same thing, then you go, okay, there might be something in that.
That's good.
And occasionally, you know, or it's just interesting to see what is going on there, and also stuff like that, you know, you're coming to do a gig and you want to make sure that people who can get in to see it. So I've always said that. I know if I'd known you're a care worker, I would have absolutely even more so. I don't know if I did know that, but
clap for me now.
Clap for you.
I don't do it now, obviously.
But, you know, it's like if people ask, or if people are asking about it, then they're likely to be a fan of the show, you know, of me and want to see it. So it just seems crazy not to do that. So, you know, if anyone is, I'm not touring at the moment, but if anyone is,
if
anyone can't afford it, I would like people not to abuse it. And I don't think people do abuse it. The only annoying thing is if you do it, and sometimes I do have to pay a small amount for the ticket. I don't think I did in your case. Mm-hmm. Then if the person doesn't turn up, that's annoying. So sometimes people go, I can't afford to come to your show, and go, oh, you have some free tickets. And they go, okay. And then they don't show up because it's like International Wednesday.
Awful.
They just wanted to complain about something and then don't come.
I'm really angry about that.
So that's annoying. But
yeah, I do that. I should just say I comp a lot of people. And do you ever get annoyed by how expensive your tickets are? Not like furious, but do you ever feel a bit weird about it? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think that, but compared to everyone else, mine are cheap. Money, £20 is the most I think they've ever been at. Yeah. Maybe a couple of, sometimes the venue set the money. So I think sometimes I might have been 22 in like central London when I've done the Queen Elizabeth Hall or something. But I always try and say, just put it more or less the cheapest. I don't understand why people are charging 50, 100 quid. Like in big venues, it seems to me like if you're doing big venues, you should be charged 10 quid because you've got so many people coming to see you. But
that's mad.
Yeah, but I don't feel, I try to keep it £15, £17.50. It's probably gone up to more like £17.50, £18 now. And post COVID, it's going to be 30 quid a ticket.
Yes.
50, 70 quid a ticket.
Good.
So try and claw something back.
Yeah, Jerry Seinfeld, was he £100 and was Dave Chappelle £100, I think?
I mean, a lot. And then you buy the tickets, you know, from touts, and it's much more than that. So yeah. I got free tickets to see Jerry Seinfeld because the guy who was promoting it had done one of my DVDs.
Yeah.
And so I got incredibly good seats. But yeah, when I went to see Monty Python, it was 250 quid a ticket, I think.
Oh my God.
For reasonable tickets. So that was with touts.
Wow.
People will pay it. What are you charging for your tickets?
Oh, I try and go as cheap as I can. But like you say, you don't always get a say in it.
No. And it's expensive touring as well. That's the thing. It's not, you know, it's not cheap to tour. So you do have to try and cover it. And the theatre has to try and make money. And now theatres are going to really have to try and make some money because they're all going to go
bust. They don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Well, once they're back, if they come back. We'll see. But, you know, I'm a nice guy. That's what that's the moral of that, moral that tale. Bringing that up.
Yeah.
Good.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'll ask you some emergency questions. We did some for the backstage bit. We're going for the newer emergency question book, all available from gofasterstrike.com. I've never asked this to anyone before, I don't think. Who is the greatest living American?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. What's he done that so makes him so great?
Magnolia. I like when he cried in it.
Okay.
Yeah. The rest of them, I don't trust really.
No, the rest of Americans.
Yeah. All of them except Tom.
Tom seems good.
Yeah. What? Who's yours?
Greatest living American. Can I think of dead ones that I really like?
Living.
Greatest living American.
You said dead ones.
I know, but I just can only think of dead ones. I was going to say Kurt Vonnegut, but he's dead. He's great. I was going to say Margaret Atwood, but she's Canadian. I was going to say maybe Tina Fey, somewhere around there. I think she might be Canadian. A lot of them are Canadian.
That's why I picked Tom.
Yeah.
They're all Canadian.
I'd have chosen John Lewis, of course, but he just died.
Me too. I was going to choose John Lewis.
Abraham Lincoln I'd have chosen, but he's died. I think he died.
Is he? He died. Yeah,
I think he died. Some people say he didn't die. There are some good ones. Thank you to our many American listeners. Probably aren't many.
No,
do you get many? Do you know where your fans for your Twitch channel? Do you know where they are located in the world?
Yep, America, Vietnam, Australia, Scotland. A lot of them.
Yeah,
because of Limmy.
Of course, yeah.
Got me loads of these Scottish people.
Well, let's talk. We'll talk about Twitch. We're on Twitch now. And when did you? Have you only got to Twitch on lockdown, or were you there? Were you a presence already?
I had an account. And I watched a few bits. I didn't think I'd have the confidence to do it. I started, I can tell you, late April. But in late April, I was just playing a game, Portal 2, where it's like a puzzle game. And I was just talking. And I found it quite boring to like five people. And then I started the football thing, I think early March.
Right.
Or maybe mid-March. And I've just been doing that. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I did. You basically are playing a football game that you played when you're 13 or 14 or something. P.S. Yeah. I was doing on Twitch playing Football Manager, which was the game, the Football Manager game I played when I was 13 or 14. Well, it was called Football Manager. It was Kevin Thomas Football Manager. It was much more retro than yours, right? So I've watched your one, and there's proper graphics and stuff in yours. Oh, yeah. This is literally just little pin men, and it doesn't really. You just see the shooting at the goal, and they miss, and they miss, and then one goes in, and it goes at the other end, and it's very basic. But I wasn't doing the same thing as you. It was sort of, yeah. Well, you've taken it a lot further than that than I have. But I think partly because it would have been weird. It was interesting that people did get attached to certain players because all the player squad had names and stuff. So I think you sort of the same realization happened to you that you could. Mm. You sort of the manager, and you act about, you do the press conferences and and much more, really.
That's all. It was just going to be press conferences and like a interview, like halftime team talk, maybe, because I got a green screen. I thought I'll just do that. And then gradually gave a player a voice, and then another one. And then obviously a story develops. And then a couple of weeks ago, I took a golf buggy on the motorway. And they had to give me an intervention, my players, when I got to the golf course. They had to sing Fast Car, as that was the only way that my Bongele addiction would end. So it's become, it's really, Twitch is really like, I've not got to sort of be this creative and this funny before. Because with stand-up, you know what it's like. Like, it takes ages to get good at it anyway. And I felt like, honestly, I felt like this January, I felt like I'd kind of broken through. And it just started going a bit better, like got a bit easier. And I was meant to do the Edinburgh Fringe this year, and I was really excited about that. Obviously, it all just went overnight, literally, everything cancelled. And now it's like, the whole thing's improvised, my Twitch thing. And it's like, I feel like I'm a funny person and I'm a comedian, but it's like I wasn't getting to be as funny as I can before.
Sure.
So I love it.
Well, I think that element of it, and I've done your Acting School of Excellence, as we said, which again is an improvised thing that you were doing that before lockdown, right? Because the first ones are with face to face with Josie and whatever.
Yeah, so that was a little web series that, we did it in a studio, and Ben Malaby directed it. Simon Ferdows produced it. You know, you've worked with Ben, I think. And it got like no views. It did really badly. My plan was to make a web series that goes viral, then go off to Edinburgh and sell out. I was doing quite a big room this year as well. So right. And it just didn't. Yeah, they got barely any views. Now people are going back and watching it, but it's been nice to bring it over to Twitch. And now, I think what it does on Twitch is obviously if we laugh, there's nowhere to hide. Like there's no escape. And I like that side of it. I like that it's totally live. I love it.
Well, I think being able to, and that's what appeals to me about it as well. And again, we weren't really, I think we were thinking, well, maybe we can live stream Rahulastapur. This might be quite a good way to do it. And maybe we'll do some snooker and stuff. Maybe, I don't know if I was even thinking I would do the stone clearing thing, which I did for about 3 months. And then, suddenly you go, and in a way, because I had kids to look after and other stuff to do, I kind of thought I can't really explore this as much as I want to. But also, I love the fact that you can't prep for it. So you're doing my new thing, which is the Ventriloquist Doll, the Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun. Terrible. What I like about it is it's me just learning to be a ventriloquist without practicing at all. Right. So I've been doing it in the snooker thing I do, and then I thought, actually, I'm kind of better at this than I thought I would be. But if you're going to do it seriously, you would sit down for 6 months and rehearse and work out a script and work out what can do. And to actually, a lot of your stuff is, there are other people in it, I know, but a lot of it's you just talking to yourself and working stuff up yourself.
Yeah.
But then that's, it's amazing how, I think it's amazing. If I find it amazing with the doll, how much it starts to feel like a genuine conversation and how we're sparking off each other, or with me being the snooker players I do in my one, you're sparking off each other. So it's, you create things and you're, I think both of us, we're creating a world which then catchphrases turn up and stuff turns up and you can work out from the way people react what they like. And so it's a great way of developing something in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And showing that you can do it. Because it's not easy. I mean, improvising is not.
It's
I mean, it sort of is easy, but it's not easy to just get into it for the first time.
Yeah, and also, like, so this sort of thing, I could never do it in front of a live audience because my stage time is all quite precious because I'm either getting paid somewhere and you get those promoters who are like, oh, you know, if you're doing a weekend for me, it has to be this level, blah, blah, blah. And or I'm previewing for an Edinburgh show, which, you know, your time is very precious. You need to be going through your notes, making sure you're doing what you want. You don't get to just have fun like you do on Twitch.
Yeah.
I mean, at this stage in my career anyway, as a stand-up, you don't get that luxury where you can just do an improvised show. Sure. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do with stand-up now when I go back to it. I've no plan, no idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when I talked to Limmy about it in November or December, and he was on the show on this, and I kind of, I basically thought he'd gone insane.
Yeah, so did I.
and just thought, why are you doing that? I mean, especially with him, because he can sell tickets for stuff, you know. Yeah. So, but obviously it's, you know, that it's, I find it fascinating. It's made me want to go back to do stand-up, but it's also made me want to go back to much, much looser stand-up than
exactly.
I was doing.
Yeah.
And also I made the decision this week, I think I was talking to you about it before, but that I'm going to go back to, if I go back to stand-up, I'm not going to do anything I've ever done on stage before. So even if I'm doing a 10-minute slot, I'm not going to do the 5 jokes that I always do at the beginning of my 10-minute slot.
Yeah, like the Jerry Seinfeld documentary where it's about him and a really angry comedian. And I'll be the angry one.
Okay.
You Jerry.
Documentary. Yeah. But I think, you know, I talked to Reg D. Hunter about this because seeing him at a gig, when I'd come back about 2005 and maybe 2007, I saw him at a gig. And he seemed to just improvise very, you know, he sat down and just talked about his evening in a quite a low key gig, but it was sort of amazing and it felt completely improvised. And I thought, God, imagine being able to like do an hour without even having any material.
But you can, you've got it in you.
Yeah.
Just confidence, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, but I find it interesting as someone who's been doing this for 30 years and not doing stand up for 30 years, but that I was still using the jokes that I knew work as this kind of anchor to go, well, look, it's a new, I would, if it was my own audience, I would take much more risks. But with an audience that I think, oh, they don't know who I am, they probably, most of them do know who I am now, enough of them do. But also, you know, I need to prove to them I'm funny, I need to do my funny jokes. And actually, fuck it, you know, I've been going long enough. I should be going, fuck it, I'll do what I think's funny, or I'll take a chance and see what comes up.
Yeah.
So I think Twitch is brilliant for that. But it's that weird thing when you're halfway through something that's quite high concept and you've got no idea. So with a dummy, I think the first one, I think you might have been watching, you might have been there with the first one, and about halfway through I was just going, is this
that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And you've got no idea if it's funny or just a load of crap.
I felt that with the Football Manager, like when I did like my third ever stream of it, because I only had like 30 people watching, and afterwards I thought, was that any good? Or really embarrassing. What am I doing?
But it sort of doesn't matter. I mean, the thing is, if it's embarrassing, it's 30 people. If it's embarrassing, you know, 200 people or whatever you got, it doesn't matter. And no one's like, I mean, people have subscribed maybe, but no one's like paying £20 to come and see it. So, and they can go somewhere else if they don't like it. It seems to me, I mean, you know, I think this would have happened without the virus, I think, to some extent. But obviously now comedians are stuck at home with nothing to do. It seems to be more comedians should be getting on board with this.
I'm
I know some
to get
more
all my friends trying to get them all on. This, I mean, this pandemic is like the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's so weird. I think they will all be on it though. In like a few months, you're going to get all the big TV ones doing.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's, you know, what happened with podcasts. As soon as you could make money from it, then everyone started doing podcasts. Mm-hmm. And like if that's the problem, if big names come, they will make money from it, and and it will nudge out everybody else. The only thing you have for Twitch and I have for podcasts is that we've got it early.
Yeah.
and I have with Twitch as well, I suppose, in that you can build an audience, and so I'm lucky with the podcast that there's enough of an audience for me to, bob around amongst all those big names that have now come in. But yeah, I mean, there's proper money in all the, and there will be proper, I mean, there's good money in Twitch, to be honest, if you're keeping it all for yourself.
Yeah.
Which I'm not. I'm putting it. Well, I gave some of it away. I gave some of it to the Comedians Fund, and I'm putting it all back into making other stuff. But because I'm getting revenues from other stuff for myself. But I with all my podcast stuff, we put most of the money back into making more stuff. But what I liked about podcasts was your own, you're autonomous and you decide what you do. And now I think there's just the scope of Twitch. If you're better than me. You've got this green screen and you've worked out.
Yep.
I've got one down here, but I've never put it up or worked out to use it. But that means you can sort of do anything. It doesn't have to be video games. It doesn't have to be anything that anyone would commission. You can just have a crack at whatever you want to do, and then and then people are going to make shows that TV will then try and poach. I think. And also rehearse.
It'd be nice to get any TV.
But I think you'll make more money from not doing it with TV. That's what, I think in the end, this podcast, my podcast that we're on now, is making more money than I would have done if I'd sold it to TV, I think, from my point of view anyway, because I'm not giving the money to any, the money we're making just goes into the company to make more podcasts, but we'd have had to pay loads of different people cuts and...
Yeah. I'm very happy with all this. Been trying to get on TV for the last 4 years with awful ideas most of the time. I've been asked to do some terrible stuff, which I've turned down, which now I feel good about. But before I was feeling like kind of regretting, should I have just been like done this awful Muslim reality TV show and then I could have been famous now? And I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been so depressed.
I think comedians just they have this autonomy. That's why they become comedians, and then some of them can be corralled into doing a TV thing, and sometimes you can do a TV thing completely on your own terms and be in control of it, but it's very rare. And so you're actually more and more now you're just being, come and do this thing and you'll be doing this, come and do this and you'll be doing this and I'll tell you what to do. And so I just think that's what I felt with podcasts, and that's what I think even more with Twitch or or whatever. You can do this on other platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Just relatively cheaply, you can set up a TV studio at home. I mean, what I love about it is because I live outside of London, and now I can just do all my press interviews sitting here and not have to go to London for one interview and then come home again. So that's just, I'm not going to let them make me go into London again for interview.
Especially if you've got good sound quality, which we do. We're using that other thing. What are we using?
Oh, Zencaster.
Which I'd never heard.
Using Zencaster.
Zencaster.
Couldn't use it with Richard Osman. That's why.
When I got the email about all the specific tech, I thought, it's because of Osman. Yeah.
No, we did it right from the start, but it's been surprising how. I mean, maybe it isn't surprising that people don't have HD cameras in their house, but it's been surprising how. Low tech, a lot of people are.
You see famous actors being interviewed on, like, I don't know, This Morning or whatever, on a Zoom thing, and they've got no lighting and a really, like, their laptop camera. It's like, it's on, you can get it off Amazon, delivered next day.
Yeah. I saw John Oliver's show this week, and I felt like he hadn't turned his mic on properly or something. It was a very good show. He's a brilliant, brilliant guy. But the sound quality, I felt like, this is a HBO TV show. They should be doing better than this. Good. Let me see what else I've got for you. I'm going to ask you some. Have you ever seen a ghost, Bilal? That's what I was interested in.
Let me think. That's a good question. Have I seen a ghost? I've not seen one. I'm sure I've been in some. Oh, I think my house was haunted when I first moved in.
Okay.
Because I heard footsteps going up and down the stairs, and I'd have these scratches on my chest. But then they left. So
okay,
but I didn't see them. So I guess no.
What, you had scratches on your chest?
Yeah, weird. That was really weird. Yeah.
But had you scratched yourself? And then,
I don't think so, because this running up and down the stairs and the scratches left at the same time. Could have just been a cheeky cat.
It could have been. You could have had someone. Sometimes people live in people's attics, don't they? And come down and poo when you're not there.
That's probably that.
Could have been that, and then just he thought, I'll have a scratch. I mean,
he looks nice. Just,
if you were doing that, if you'd managed to successfully live in someone's attic, you'd kind of want them to know, wouldn't you? You'd just be feeling like you'd be sitting there for months going, this is, I'm so fucking cool.
Like how a serial killer returns to the season.
Yeah, because, you know, you've pulled it off, and then if no one knows you've pulled it off, then it's sort of point, you know, you're living in an attic for no fucking reason, aren't you? It's still not great living in an attic, but you're living for free.
So just come down and catch me.
Come down, go, I'll just try and give Lee some clues.
What was happening? See, I just thought it was ghosts.
It's always... you've got to think of the most logical explanation, and ghosts are not the most... The most logical is a man living in... Or a woman. Or a cat living in your attic, coming down when you go to the toilet. Did you notice any smells in your toilet when you came back? I don't remember doing a poo like that. Do you remember that happening?
No, don't think so.
Well, maybe they had Febreze up there as well.
I did smell Febreze.
There you go. So they had it all planned out, and they thought, this is so brilliant. It was too brilliant. And they kind of wanted to...
And then they disappeared. Maybe they died. You know,
they died in the attic. You'll probably find them in the attic.
Oh, there'll be a little corpse in there,
It'll have mummified. It's probably... The smell's gone upwards, probably. Have you got an attic in this?
It's a loft conversion, so that makes it... Could live on the roof.
They could have lived on... They could have been coming down. Is there a chimney or a skylight?
Yes.
They could have, yeah, chimney. They could have been sleeping in a sleeping bag on the roof.
Yeah.
When you're out, just nip down through the skylight, go to the toilet,
in the
dry off. Use your towels to dry off the rain and stuff.
I think that's the only ghost. I think that's the only...
Okay.
I feel like there might be something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's good. So I want to talk to you. You've had a nose job. It's kind of things are going pretty well for you.
Shall I try and find the pictures of the old nose? So I should say that, I mean, I don't have to say, but I got it because I couldn't breathe out of one nostril.
And so you can still breathe out the other one? It's still vanity?
It was okay.
I need to breathe out of two nostrils, do you now?
You can do it.
One nostril, not good. I'm not, my own breathing isn't very good. I'm a mouth breather generally because my nose, I got hit by a cricket ball here when I was young. And my nose is never in my primary. I'm very offended by that term mouth breather because I breathe through my mouth and I don't think I'm ridiculous. I think it's better to breathe through your mouth. I can breathe through my
mouth. You can do both at the same time. Listen,
look how much more air you're getting through your mouth. Whoa, it's lovely. And then your nose. Meditation getting little tiny.
Through the nose out my collages. Where is it? Okay. Here's a good, it's a bit weird. So it got broken when I was like a toddler, they think. So it grew kind of bent. And look, this is my good side. Let's see if you can see it. That's my good side before and after.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's quite different.
Yeah. Wait till you see my bad side. Let me see. Oh, look, that's the bad side. Can you see that, everybody?
Wow.
You see that before and after?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now
pretty
I'm
amazing.
Pretty stunning. But I wrote I wrote stand up about it because it's weird because I didn't know it'd be that different. And like, I didn't know it'd be that good. And you're meant to love yourself how you are.
Yeah.
But I love myself better after the nose job, which is the right message.
Why did they need to cut all that bit of the nose off that if it was just about breathing? That it seems to have taken a lot of nose off there.
It was bent. And they straightened it, and they didn't have to smooth it. They just did it.
Well, we're here, we'll just take a bit off you. We'll just shave a bit off. You went to Turkey to do it.
Yeah, a lovely week.
Was it just cheaper in Turkey, or were you on holiday?
£10,000 in Turkey.
Yeah.
In the UK, it's like £10,000 minimum.
Right.
And
so you're in Turkey but you had to stay in Turkey for 2 weeks to do it.
For 1 week.
1 week.
That came back to stand up with a plaster on my nose.
Okay.
Went on
tour. Did anything happen to you in Turkey? It sounds like an exotic thing to do to go to Turkey to have a nose job.
I mean, it was
an exciting time for you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Met a lot of cats. I like cats quite a lot. And there was a cat called Coco that I got on with quite well. Okay. Gave it some chicken. And that's kind of all that happened. Then I came back.
Didn't the cost of the hotel and stuff add up to $8,000 though?
Included, all inclusive.
Well, everything included.
The flights weren't inclusive.
Okay.
Everything else. Everyone was Turkish though.
Right.
They all tried to speak Turkish to me and up.
Do you think I should have a crack?
Yeah, why not?
Maybe it might make me if they just pull. Maybe it just needs pulling out here a bit.
I'm going to get it all done. I'm going to get it all.
Yeah.
Get the jaw.
I mean, you look good. You're very. You know, you're a very handsome man anyway. I'm sure, but you look. You're very. Good looking.
I thank you. I just because I had a nap before. I used some face scrub.
Okay.
I would have been very sweaty. It would have been awful.
I hope it's not inappropriate for me to say you're very. I know that the comedy is the industry has changed. I just like to apologise for objectifying you there.
You can objectify me. It's the comedians who were There's bad ones.
Okay.
It's right. Not that. It's not that.
Okay, it's not just saying nice things.
It's not that. Worse.
Okay.
You're all right.
You're not even allowed to tell a man he's handsome anymore without exactly. It being... can't say anything.
Cancel culture.
Yeah. Cancelled. Now, your second show, your second show, Biscuit, that's about dating apps. As a there are Muslim...
Dating apps. Minder, Muslim Tinder.
Minder.
It's real. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it was about that stuff. I thought it'd be a nice follow-up. Got 2 reviews all month after being nominated the year before.
Right.
So if any reviewers are watching, has made it a tough month. I was the Chortle newcomer nominee. They didn't review me.
Right. Chortle didn't review you.
No, and I was one of the...
That's pretty unusual.
I know. I don't know. I don't know what happened there. But and then I nearly died of pneumonia that month.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I got very ill at the Fringe, came back to London, went into hospital for 7 days, and I couldn't work for like 2 months.
Maybe you had the COVID virus, an early version of that.
2017.
Yeah, it might have been that. You might have been patient zero.
I could have been the one that started it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably that.
Was that your bad year, or was this not your... You said you had a bad year. Is the bad year you had pneumonia and 2 reviews in Edinburgh, or was there a worse
bad
year?
I've had a few bad years. It's not quite bad since 2016, to be honest.
Okay.
Now I feel great with Twitch. It was the year... So when I got Last Christmas, I had a tour that year. No. Oh, okay. I toured the year before and it did very badly, just very low turnout compared to what I was used to. It was all just... I don't know what happened. It all just kind of went wrong. Didn't get loads of things I wanted. All of these treatments and stuff. Didn't get... You know, it's hard anyway, but didn't get anywhere. Didn't do very well financially. And then auditioned to be in Last Christmas. And then I was hanging out with Emma Thompson suddenly. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is she? I don't think I've ever met Emma Thompson.
Very
I was,
nice.
Yeah, she I had a massive rattling. Crush on her when I was a young man.
Mm.
I mean, not that I don't now, but when I was, you know, when I was a young comedy fan in my teens, she was the pinup.
She is like an angel.
Yeah.
She's just like you'd imagine. She, don't know if I should. I mean, I guess this was a secret, but I don't know. She, film was shot around central London. And I think she bought loads of blankets for some homeless people or something,
right.
And some food. And it's like she was constantly doing that. She knew my name when I got to set, which was the most surreal thing. My first day, it was Matt. Yeah, really strange, but yeah, that was nice.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, well, that's good. And Amelia Clark.
I play her friend. She's very nice.
That's nice.
Very nice.
Was she nice in real life? Did she have
very friendly.
But she had that attitude on her.
No, but she felt very famous.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a celebrity. Whereas Emma Thompson is like your mum's friend.
Yeah.
Which is just really surreal. Paul Feig directed it, though. He's very nice.
Yes.
I've stayed in touch.
Did Bryony Kimmings write it? Was she one of the writers? Yeah.
Yeah. Paul Feig likes my Instagram posts sometimes, and that's always a good confidence boost.
See, that's exciting. I love that. A lot of you youngsters, going to Hollywood is a real thing for a lot of. Is that something you want to do? Do you want to go over to America and work out there?
Well, this is what happened. My life's a bit weird. My plan was to get a US visa as soon as I could, apply for one, which is like $5,000 for an artist visa. I was going to try and save up, go over there and try and do stand up there, mainly because over here I've been nonstop being asked to be to do Muslim and Asian stuff on TV. That makes me cringe. And I thought, rather than, because the thing is, I could do like a Guardian article about that stuff and talk about it. But I thought, I just want to be a comedian and get on with it.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll just go there where it looks like I might. Obviously, I don't think I'd become a huge celebrity there, but I might have a better shot at doing what I want to do at least. And I thought, you know, it's just a cool place to go as well.
Yeah.
You know, be a bit of fun. But now I think I'm just going to be a Twitch streamer who does 1p a month or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting times. I can't keep you too long because you have to do. You're going off to do.
Yeah.
Which show are you doing tonight? You're doing
Football
the
Manager.
BS.
Yeah.
So people can follow you across.
Yes, we can start slightly later because I absolutely love this chat. they won't mind.
And do you think being religious and being a comedian? I don't know how religious you are, but I know you are religious.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? I mean, that's almost, there's so few people who admit to it. It's sort of, that's almost the thing that that's, you know, that you're, you know what I mean? It's become so far the other way that it's yeah. there's a few Christian comedians I know.
Yeah. I get it, but that's exciting that there's a religious comedian. I think it's more being Muslim is, you know, very different to being a Christian comedian because you're constantly getting slagged off everywhere. So people want to see your opinion. I get it. Like, I appreciate it sometimes. It's just that it's all I've ever been asked to do, which winds me up. And also you get the feeling that you become a spokesperson of everything. And I don't know about a lot of stuff. Like, I don't care about what some MP has said or something. I don't have to have a say on all of it. I'm not really that political. I don't really think about that much. Because it's boring to me, to be honest.
Yeah, but it is interesting because, it does, you know, as a white comedian, I can be whatever I want to. I can be political if I want to. I can talk about whatever I want to. And people aren't immediately going, bang, you have to talk about this one thing. And if you don't talk about it, that's weird. Because why aren't you talking about that one thing that's the big thing? And so to be able to, you know, again, I suppose Twitch is giving you that because there's the stuff you're doing on Twitch. Mm. Is not referencing any, and it's just you're a comedian doing funny stuff.
Imagine if I pitched a Football Manager idea, they'd be like, okay, what's the Muslim angle?
Yeah.
You know,
and so to not be allowed to do comedy about without referencing.
Yeah.
If someone said to me, Rich, you've been brought up a Christian, you have to do comedy from a Christian perspective for the rest of your life. And if anyone asks you a question about Christ, you have to be ready to talk about it. Which I would love, by the way, because I love talking about Jesus more than a religious person does. But that, you know, it's sort of so weird. I mean, there's so many things that I think writing this book and obviously all the stuff that's been going on in lockdown with, statues and Black Lives Matter. And it sort of just makes me realize that has really brought home the privilege that I've enjoyed as being a white middle class man through the last 30 years. You know, I mean, it's a shame for the next generation me who won't be able to get any work. But it was good for me to get through.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I say, I could get really wound up about all of it and stuff, but I just want to get on with it. Like, I don't want to be. Also, I don't want to be seen as a victim. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Same as like being like working class and stuff. It's not something I really talk about in comedy. Because I don't want that to be my thing. Like, oh, we should feel sorry for him. Because I think, well, I'm as funny as any of the posh comedians.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I try, I just want to be funny.
But that's what I liked about comedy when I started comedy and the circuit was, I mean, it probably wasn't more, in class terms, it was much more diversified. It probably wasn't there weren't that many women doing it and there weren't that many Black and Asian comedians. There were some, but what I liked about it was that you'd go to Adelaide Festival and there'd be a guy who used to be a bank manager, there'd be a couple of university guys, and then there'd be a guy who worked on the docks, and there'd be a guy who'd come, you know, there were all these different backgrounds, and just someone was funny and had gone, oh, I'll, you know, maybe I can give this a crack.
Yeah.
And I think just the way the economy has changed means it's much, much harder to do that. And, you know, God knows what's going to happen after all of this.
But yeah, I felt like that. I felt like that open mic level when I first started. I was like 20 or 21, and I just loved how everyone was from a different background.
Yeah, but it's good. And it's still there to some extent.
Everyone was doing their own thing, but as soon as it became, I started getting paid for it, and people want to put me on TV. That's when it's just fully pigeonholed. It's just depressing. I was really naive. I thought because I decided to go into comedy and stuff because I love like Armando Iannucci and the day to day and all of that. That was like my main, like, I want to be like those guys. And I just assumed if I'm funny at what I do, I'll just get to be Armando Iannucci. I thought people would just say, all right, write something. And then it's just like I mentioned before, like come on TV come on BBC on the Sunday morning and just debate a far right guy. I was like, why would I ever do that? You know? Yeah.
Oh, well, it's exciting. I sort of think, even when I started podcasts, I thought, you know, and I was 40 or so when I started podcasts. I was 40. And I sort of thought, you know, if I had another 15 years run up to this, then you could really get somewhere with this. But I think like you're still under 30. You're still, You're 29. No, you're 30. This, you know, you're 29. 20, so you're 28 now. 28 years old. Great age to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got a, there's a long period of time you can work at this whilst hopefully being back doing stand up as well. And I just think the internet, and I think we're still waiting. I feel like there's the Charlie Chaplin of the internet somewhere out there, right? Who will become like a because it's the same, the way that Charlie Chaplin became, he became a millionaire almost immediately because he made films and no one was doing that. He made funny films and everyone went in and paid, you know, a nickel or whatever it was. But so many people were paying a nickel that Charlie Chaplin became a millionaire almost instantaneously. And that's, I've always thought that's got to happen with the internet. It's just, you know, there's a worldwide audience. Mm. If you create the thing that's good enough, then everyone gives you 10p yeah. and that's £1 billion. You know, that's how it should work.
I think it's really set
up. I think there's someone out there. Yeah. There's someone out there who's going to be that person who really, really breaks through with it. It could be you.
Could
you're
be
very
me.
Talented. You're very talented.
Twitch Charlie Chaplin.
You could be. I'm
going to put that on my next Edinburgh. The Twitch is Charlie Chaplin, Richard Herring.
It's not easy what you do. And like, you know, I don't, and I've been doing comedy for a long time and it is not easy.
No.
Even the stupid things we're doing on this are not easy. They're tremendous fun and I guess the pressure's off. But to be able to do it well, the idea of someone going on, you know, I mean, what Limmy does is astonishing, you know, to be able to go on and talk for 3 hours or whatever he's doing. I know your things are long, though. Your things are long, aren't they?
2 hours usually.
Yeah, that's a long time.
He does 4 hours every day.
I know, he's nuts.
Yeah.
He's a nut. How did you become friendly with Limmy?
Through Twitter. It was when my Zaffa Cakes cake shop thing got a little bit of attention. He just tweeted me about that. And then I was up at the Fringe in 2016 for the first time. He just messaged me and said, I'm in town. Do you want to get some food? And then it just known him since then.
That's cool.
Lovely. Yeah, very nice guy. I hope he's not watching.
He won't be watching.
He watches stuff.
Does he?
Yeah, he sneaks around.
Should I do my Scotch accent?
Yeah.
What,
to scare him away? To get rid of him?
I just like to infuriate. I love infuriating him. If I can do it. So we have stuff that we can promote. We can come at your Zaffa Cakes on Twitch as well. So follow you. People can give you £5 a month for free. Please. If they are with Amazon Prime.
I need it more than.
And they can give you money as well if they want to give you money. That's what I sort of think about this. You know, if you're doing something most nights as you are, if someone's giving you £5 of actual money a month, they're still only paying you like 20p a day or something. Not even, you know, it's such a tiny amount of money, really. If you can afford to give people money and you think they deserve the money, then please do. But that Amazon Prime thing is nuts, so do use that to give that to people. And I hope you will carry on. I hope you will become a big Hollywood star.
Thank you.
Get to do all your stuff. I think with America, it may, I mean, they are sort of so obsessed with race in America, but also you can just get on, you know, there's things where they've let people get on.
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of stuff. I'm not really thinking about that now. I mean, yeah. It's gone so mad over there anyway.
Yeah.
I'd still like to go out there and do stuff. Maybe try and build my profile a bit with Twitch first, I guess. Might as well.
Well, it's the thing that I think all live comedy has to realize, that there's a worldwide audience, and actually that's good for everyone. Again, if you can monetize it to a tiny degree. If you can get 1,000 people in America watching you and giving you a nickel, that's 5,000 nickels.
It's a lot of nickels.
There's 5,000 of them. And that's every time. So you just have to, then you have to take that to the bank and change it into pounds.
And you pour it into the thing in HSBC.
But will they do nickels in? I don't know. They'll take the nickels. That's the annoying thing. Yeah.
You know, you have to do it.
Have to post your nickel. It costs more to post you a nickel than a nickel. Not sure what a nickel is.
God, I haven't thought about this. We're going to lose everything.
How much is a nickel? Is it 5p?
I don't know.
Nickel.
I have no idea. It's just funny saying American.
I'd take a nickel. If everyone in America would give me a nickel, then, you know, we could make our own films, do whatever we want, couldn't we? It's kind of offensive that they don't do that.
Let's make our own film.
Okay, we're going to. Let's do it.
Okay.
I think it's very exciting, and I hope, and it'd be lovely if comedians form a little community and are supportive of each other. But I think there's good, but you know, it's nice to do some stuff with you. It's nice to mix mix it up and find little gangs in this. And I think there's some stuff. I've got some plans.
Oh,
I've got some loose plans.
Oh.
And I think we can do something exciting.
Oh.
By we, I mean comedians, but
me and you.
Could be me and you. Look, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for not being that arsy about me, about the name and everything, like I thought you were going to be.
No.
I think once you're actually in Hollywood and then you come back on, and then, because at the moment I'm still just a little bit high. I'm the high status one in this relationship.
Yeah.
Once you become, I've seen that a thousand times. Yeah, just not by much, just a little bit.
Yeah, in a month it could be.
Yeah, in a month it's the other way around, and your hair will be all up in the air. You'll have had another nose job. You'll have a different nose.
Everything, and I won't even reply to your tweets.
You won't go. You won't know who I am. I know it's going to happen. It happens. It's happened to me a thousand times throughout the history of this. Everyone's very nice. Thank you very much for buying that badge.
It's okay.
Instead of giving me 40 quid for. I mean, if you feel like paying me back the 40 quid at any point, don't worry. I am paying you for doing this. I think what I might do is I'll take £39 off of it.
39 as well, yeah, of course.
You paid a pound. I'm not going to be tight about it. I'll take £39 off. I'd prefer it in cash. If you could give me in cash, it'd be better though.
Well, thank
you. Maybe I'll wait till I see you.
And thank you for having me. I think I told you before, I've listened to pretty much all of them. Maybe two people I didn't like.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like anyway, so I didn't listen.
Okay, all right.
Because they're bad people.
Yeah, there have been some bad people on here. But mainly, I try to get nice people on, and it mainly turns out...
You don't know.
I can't help it.
It's because of your high status. They're all very nice to you.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Yeah. No, I get that. Look, it's lovely. Go and get prepared for your football. Good luck with whatever's going on today.
There's a lot happening. God. Yeah.
And do go across and watch him, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, Bilal Zafar. Thank you very much. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rollerstopper with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Bilal Zafar. The music's by Pess. Thank you very much to everyone at Twitch. Thank you very much to everyone at the British Comedy Guide and Acast, particularly. Thank you to Chris Evans and everyone, not that one, and everyone at Sky Potato and Go Faster Stripe, doing amazing work for us. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Head to twitch.tv/RKHerring to see loads and loads of live stupid comedy most evenings of the week. Go to gofasterstripe.com/badges if you would like to give a monthly donation. Rahalaspa.co.uk/Kickstarter if you fancy those amazing award rewards for self-playing snooker. Now go back to your constituencies and prepare for government.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.